Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is London, where it is, I think we now have to absolutely acknowledge that it's unseasonably warm and sunny and lovely here. Not bragging, not boasting, not busting anybody's buttons, not rubbing anybody's nose in anything, but it's just, it's true. And it's delightful. It's the city is ablaze in magnolia blossoms in London. Did you ever think those two things went together? No siree. But we have business to take care of. Even so, ladies and gentlemen, we're indoors, away from the sunshine, the breezes, the loveliness of an early springtime in London. And we're indoors for the purpose of finding out, once again, we're not number one. Mr. Blackwell Jr.?
If I were a woman, what would be the best country to be a woman in if I were a woman?
Okay. Well phrased, Mr. Blackwell Jr. No relation. Women represent about 50% of our worldwide population, but they do not yet receive 50% of the opportunities. Governmental regulations, mentorship programs, and companies whose programs encourage women to reach their leadership potential help close the gender gap in many of the world's nations. Each year since 2006, the World Economic Forum, aren't those cats that gather in Davos? Cats and kittens, sorry. Releases its annual Global Gender Gap Report, which examines the gap between men and women in four fundamental categories: economic participation and opportunity, educational attainment, health and survival, and political empowerment. Out of the 110 countries that have been included in every report, 95 have shown improvement over the last 4 years. Women are getting more opportunities then. This is Iceland's fifth year in the number one spot. So, Mr. B. Jr.?
If I were a woman, I would want to enter a room in Iceland. I would.
Okay, fair. North America as a region has improved 5% between... No relation. Between 2006 and 2013. Italy ranked 71, gained 9 places this year. Colombia was the largest riser, improving by 28 places to rank 35th. The highest ranked country for the Middle East and North Africa region is Israel, which is 53rd. But where is the United States? Surely we're number one.
Don't call me Shirley.
Okay. The USA ranked 23 in the Global Gender Gap Report. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are not number one. It's a thrill to be able to be nominated to announce that. What the frack? We've talked on this broadcast, and by we, I mean me, about many of the questions surrounding the fracking boom. This is one that really hadn't come to my attention, although I knew sort of tangentially that the fracking waste does bring to the surface or wherever the waste is gathered some of the natural radioactivity from the soil. But then comes this from the Bismarck, North Dakota Tribune. Police and state health officials are investigating the illegal dumping of radioactive filter socks in an abandoned gas station in the tiny remote town of Noonan in North Dakota. It's in Divide County, in case you're wondering. This is a vacant building filled with toxic waste, said Divide County Sheriff's Deputy Zach Schroeder, who said the building's apparent owner is a fugitive on felony larceny charges in Wyoming and so far not traceable. The building's contents were reported 2 weeks ago to the emergency manager Jody Gunlock, real name, who said the situation has been transferred to the state health department and to law enforcement. Health Department Waste Management Director Scott Radig said the building contains at least twice as much filter sock material, which is more than twice as radioactive as the open trailers loaded with the socks discovered near another community 3 weeks ago. Filter socks are used to capture the solids in flow back water during fracking, in case you were wondering. In case you're up on your fracking gear. Schroeder said 6 separate rooms in the old mobile gas station contained industrial-sized black garbage bags of filter socks. He estimates at least 200 bags or more are piled into the dirt floor structure's warren of rooms. Schroeder said he's trying to track down the building owner. From records in the building, Schroeder said he's identified a filter sock supply company, Acceleration Production, and hopes that will help identify the oil field service company that used them in oil field operations and ditched them in the building. Residents of Noonan, population 120, don't have information, and it's likely whoever dumped the garbage bags did so under cover of darkness. In the meantime, Gunlock said the building may be fenced off. The bags are dust-covered, he said, and may have been there for some time. I don't think this was ignorance, just deliberate, Gunlock said. Tests done on the material last week show it is low-level radium that emits big, weak particles that don't penetrate skin but would be hazardous to inhale or ingest. Gunlock says, it's a pretty big mess. Tests of the material registered 5 times the background rate of naturally occurring radiation. People of Noonan are not at risk as long as the building is secure, which it isn't. It has broken windows and old unsecured doors. Filter socks used to filter oil production fluids are banned for disposal in North Dakota because they concentrate naturally occurring radiation found in fluids from oil production. The state health department is developing rules for tracking radioactive waste because of dumping incidents like this one. North Dakota is undergoing a fracking boom. No time like the present to develop rules for tracking waste. Radig estimates oil production results, ladies and gentlemen, in 27 tons of filter socks daily. 27 tons of filter socks. Just some of what fracking brings to us. And now, news of News Corp. Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. You know that Rebecca Brooks, who edited one of the major tabloids owned by Nice Corp, the News of the World, until it was shut down in the wake of the phone hacking scandal. She's on trial, ladies and gentlemen, along with 4 of her co-defendants. Of course, that's why they're co-defendants, all on charges of phone hacking and conspiracy. The trial has been, of course, the her one-time colleague, Andrew Coulson, who edited the newspaper at one point and then became media chief of the Conservative Party. He has denied all charges, but the trial has been told that 4 other former News of the World journalists, using all those words loosely, including 3 senior editorial figures, have now admitted conspiracy to hack phones during Coulson's editorship. Conspiracy to hack phones, that's got to be nice. Nice people doing nice things. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Por você, ai,
From just off Leicester Square in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. Organizers of the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics have been told that a building meant to house 3,000 journalists won't be ready in time for the Games. What if they gave an Olympics and nobody reported it? This project, part of a number of public-private initiatives for the first South American Olympics, also included a media center for non-accredited journalists, which is undergoing extensive renewal. We were informed by City Hall that the building won't be ready, said Rio 2016's communication director, Mario Andrada. So we're exploring different possibilities. We'll find a solution, unquote. Bob Costa, how do you like your tent? The reversal is the latest to blight Games organizers and comes days before a high-level inspection team from the International Olympic Committee travels to Rio. It warned preparations needed to be re-accelerated the previous time it visited, way last September. Among the biggest concerns is the polluted Guanabara Bay. You've heard about that on this program, where the sailing events are to take place, and a northern extreme sport and canoeing hub where work is behind schedule. Oh, you don't want to be sloppy with the extreme sport hub. That would scare me. The City Hall press office didn't immediately answer when Bloomberg called for comment, not the mayor, the news service. Brazilian authorities a couple months ago announced $2.4 billion will be spent on infrastructure directly related to the Games. That figure will increase as more projects are added. Brazil's also hosting the World Cup this year, and preparations for that event have also been troubled as the cost of 12 new or refurbished stadiums has ballooned by more than 40%. Work on some arenas and new urban mobility programs is behind schedule, prompting criticism from the president of soccer's governing body, FIFA. Brazil has just realized what it means to organize a World Cup, said Sepp Blatter. They started a lot too late. It is the country which is the farthest behind since I've been at FIFA. And moreover, it's been the only one that's had so much time, 7 years, to prepare itself. Well, they'll obviously learn from that before the Olympics, won't they? Oh, wait. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. It so energized Vladimir Putin, didn't it? Having an Olympics, you know, just the thing to get a guy's blood flowing in a whole new direction, like west. Speaking of Vladimir Putin, wasn't it just a few short years ago that President of the United States said this?
When I was asked a question, do you trust Vladimir Putin? In front of a huge press conference after our meeting, my answer was yes. Now, I could have tried to be clever like Ronald Reagan, who had the great answer, trust but verify, but that would have sounded like plagiarism. And so I said, yes. And the reporter said, why? And I said, because I looked into his eyes and I saw his soul.
Yes, it was in answer to my rhetorical question. And so, I don't think Bush ever said what exactly it was he saw in there. But I think we're getting a good idea now. And now,
he's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There will be more about the other situation momentarily. But ladies and gentlemen, despite its public commitment to mortgage fraud enforcement, Your and my Justice Department did not ensure that the problem was a high-priority law enforcement matter, according to an internal inquiry made public this week. That's right. Eric Holder kept saying mortgage fraud is a problem we're taking seriously at the Justice Department. Not so, according to the Inspector General Michael Horowitz. He said within the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division, mortgage fraud was, quote, the lowest-ranked criminal threat in the unit's, quote, lowest crime category from 2009 to 2011. And in some of the Bureau's most prominent field offices, L.A., Miami, and New York, mortgage fraud ranked low or was not listed as a priority at all. When you're wondering why nobody's gone to jail in the wake of the financial crisis, this would be a smoking gun lock. Yes, I'm name-checking the guy in North Dakota. The Inspector General also reviewed a highly publicized October 2012 incident in which the Justice Department and Attorney General Holder vastly overstated the success of an enforcement effort involving total losses first estimated at $1 billion. Well, that was a big law enforcement job taking on the mortgage fraudsters. $1 billion, the actual loss involved in the fraud scheme was about $95 million. And the number of criminal defendants charged as part of the initiative was 107, not 530 as originally reported by officials of the Justice Department. Thank you, Eric Holder. Eric Holder, who a couple years ago now said in a speech defending the kill list process for deciding whom the federal government wants to rub out. The Fourth Amendment requires due process, he said, or the Fifth Amendment. Fifth Amendment requires due process. It doesn't require judicial process. Same Eric Holder. But there's more from the Inspector General. According to the Afghan Education Ministry, only about one-third of Afghans can read and write. After three decades of civil war, many people never had the chance to go to school, and many more have only received the most basic education. In 2009, the U.S. launched a $200 million literacy program, which aimed to have everyone in the military, in the Afghan military, reach at least basic standards by the end of this year. A report by the U.S. Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, the SIGAR, said U.S. military officials now admit this goal is probably unattainable. Probably. It's probably unattainable. It's a huge obstacle to Afghanistan's attempts to build a modern, efficient army, you'd think, having a basically illiterate army. Push that button there, the one with the thing. One of the big problems of the literacy training, according to somebody who went through it, was that it focused on delivery rather than results, something the SIGAR also highlighted. Quote, our teachers weren't bad, said the Afghan who went through it, but they were running the courses based on a contract, so it didn't really matter to them if we learned or not. Contractor? Interesting. My brother, who's still at school, is better at showing me how to spell out words than my teacher, says this student, former student called Ali. Another reason literacy rates remain so stubbornly low is the very high turnover rate in the Afghan army. SIGAR said as half the soldiers who complete the training then leave the Afghan army. But that $200 million, we'll get that back, won't we? News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So what is it we know about Ukraine at this point? It's been a remarkable 2 or 3 weeks where the Shall we be really neutral and say the information apparatuses on both sides of the world have been churning out unbelievable reams of stuff, and one has one's choice as to what and which to believe, or if any of it. It is just, let's pick out some facts, some known facts, some actual facts, as opposed to characterizations from both sides, from the Russians and from Washington. The new provisional government in Kiev has, in three key cabinet posts, members of the Svoboda Party, which is reliably reported by everybody who touches the subject to be a right-wing party with, and they call it neo-Nazi tendencies. I'm wondering what the neo part is. It's a new improved Hitler. It's Jimmy Hitler. I don't know, but it's neo-Nazi tendencies. Three key posts in the provisional government of the Kiev government, of the provisional cabinet of the new provisional Kiev government. That, of course, is what allows the Russians to go on this thing of saying they're saving the, you know, saving the first the Crimeans and then the eastern Ukrainians from a rerun of the Second World War. We know that the Russians moved their troops into Crimea. We know that Russia possessed Crimea for 200 years until Nikita Khrushchev gave it to Ukraine in 1954. So it's been a bit of a chess piece. And we know that the so far the European Union and the United States have threatened sanctions against the Russians if they don't undo all of this, whatever it is they're doing. And so far, those sanctions have not yet gone into effect. And late in the day, London time, there was a report that Secretary of State Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov had announced that this was all going to be worked out by some emendations or amendments to the Ukrainian Constitution, which theoretically would mean more autonomy for Crimea or would mean, hey, Russia, just take us over. I don't know what it would mean. They didn't say. But it's a wonderfully complex, complicated situation. People have died, so it's also a very serious situation. And, you know, it allows folks like John McCain to get on Sunday morning TV, so it can't be bad. That seems to be about the most we can say that we know at the moment, except for this.
The Crimean War, it was a big old blast. Ukraine, it's not just from before, it's flashing back from the past. Ukraine, don't know why, don't know why, don't know why. Ukraine. You
but ask President Monroe.
This is the neighborhood Ukraine. We'll pass by, we'll pass by Ukraine.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's follow the dollar. Well, first, you remember LIBOR, putting the lie in LIBOR, the rate at which banks say they are borrowing money to report on, a daily basis to an international forum, which helps to set the interest rates that the rest of us pay around the world. Well, a U.S. regulator has sued 16 banks for allegedly manipulating that rate. It's used to set trillions of dollars in financial contracts, including mortgages and financial transactions around the world. Regulators said the manipulation caused substantial losses to 38 U.S. banks, which were shut down during and after the financial crisis. The banks sued by the FDIC include Barclays, HSBC, Citigroup, Royal Bank of Scotland, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Deutsche Bank, Lloyds Bank, Credit Suisse, and UBS. Names you can trust. The British Bankers Association has also been sued by the regulator, the FDIC. That association participated in the alleged scheme to protect the revenue stream it generated from selling LIBOR licenses and to appease the panel bank defendants that were members of the BBA, that is to say, the banks. LIBOR is the average rate at which banks lend money to one another and is decided on a daily basis. Most of the world's biggest banks contribute estimates to form the LIBOR, but there have been allegations that some have looked to profit by it by understating or overstating their submissions. Over the last 2 years, regulators across the globe have been investigating the manipulation of the rate. There have been $3.7 billion in fines up to now, and that's before the FDIC stepped in. A string of international banks and brokers, including Barclays and the Royal Bank of Scotland, have faced both criminal and civil penalties for their involvement in the scandal. Some banks have also been found to have understated their submissions in the period during and after the financial crisis. They did so in order to avoid the perception that they were having to borrow at higher interest rates than their peers and might therefore be judged to be in financial difficulty, don't you know? And yes, in answer to your question, no individual has been charged. No one has gone to jail. You know, the U.S. government makes vast interest payments, still following the dollar, to technology giants including Apple and Microsoft on the billions of dollars they shelter from tax offshore. Securities and Exchange Commission disclosures found by the Bureau of Investigative Journalism shows that Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Cisco Systems hold $163 billion in U.S. government debt, treasury bonds mainly, earning these companies substantial sums in interest. This means American taxpayers, in effect, pay interest to tech giants on the offshore cash which is held there so they don't have to pay taxes on it to the U.S. government. And we'd prefer not to pay taxes. You pay us interest, okay? How's that deal? There is no suggestion that any of the company's activities are in any way unlawful. That's the sentence inserted by the lawyers in this piece. And again, you know, did these regulations fall from Mars, or did some tech people hang with some government people? And the Bureau estimates the cash-rich digital companies hold $124 billion in Treasury bonds. The remaining $39 billion is held in U.S. government agency debt. The amount invested by Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Cisco is so large they would collectively be the 14th biggest overseas purchaser of Treasury bonds, ahead of Singapore, ahead of Norway. If a U.S. multinational puts its offshore cash into a U.S. bank and uses the money to buy U.S. treasuries, stocks, and bonds, those funds ought to be treated as having been repatriated and subject to U.S. law and tax, says Democratic Senator Carl Levin. If the cash was brought onshore taxed to the current U.S. corporation tax rate of 35%, it would produce an $89 billion windfall for the U.S. Treasury. But, of course, companies don't pay Most companies, most corporations don't pay that statutory rate. That's the cute part. And finally, as we follow the dollar, the latest federal tax report is in for Lady Gaga's Born This Way Foundation. This is a report from Roger Friedman of Showbiz 911. The tax report is not good news, despite spending $348,000 in 2012 on their outreach bus tour. The Born This Way Foundation otherwise managed to spend about $1.5 million on legal fees, publicity, and a website. The foundation, which lists Gaga's mother as president, had a lot of expenses in 2012 that had nothing to do with its supposed charitable objective. They spent $300,000 on strategic consulting, $62,000 on stage productions, $50,000 on social media, and $50,000 on event coordination. Also, $808,000 on other, $406,000 on legal, $150,000 on philanthropic consulting, $60,000 on research, $58,000 on publicity fees, $78,000 on travel. They spent $72,000 on salaries, perhaps for running the Born This Way bus, although that episode had its own expense line. Grants to organizations and individuals, $5,000. Net assets, $2.1 million. Donations came to $2.6 million, but there's no detailed listing of contributors or donations. Lady Gaga apparently loaned Born This Way over $10,000 to pay expenses. Meantime, reports Friedman, it's unclear that anyone was really helped by the Born This Way Foundation other than lawyers, consultants, publicists, and travel agents. So, yeah, it does appear Gaga really did learn everything she knows from Madonna.
Like a charity, bringing with my life. I want to share it with everyone. I want them to know deep inside how I feel deep inside. And it's good. It's really good. I want to share that with the world. I am a walking charity. I'm a charity.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Addie, remember Addie the Atom?
Yes, sir. Reporting for duty.
Excellent. You remember last week we had this report that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said 80% of American nuclear facilities were normal?
Yeah, I do. I like normal.
Yeah, me too. I wondered about the rest. Here we go. The NRC found 11% of the facilities operate at a degraded level of performance.
Degraded is good, right? Means you don't need a grade?
It doesn't mean that. Of highest concern are two facilities, Brown's Ferry 1 power plant in Alabama and the Fort Calhoun plant in Nebraska. The NRC ranked both in its fourth designation, having a safety finding of high significance that will require higher oversight, according to the report. The Fort Calhoun plant had only just restarted after last December after flooding forced the plant to close for 2 years.
You can't blame flooding on a nuke.
No, you can't. The assessments are an annual report card on the performance of the nation's nuclear power plants, said NRC official. We ensure nuclear power plants are safe, inspecting them and rating their performance regularly as part of our mission to protect people and the environment. The NRC graded 9 additional power plants with a degraded level of performance.
That's almost as good, right?
Those include Brown's Ferry 2 in Alabama, Duane Arnold in Iowa, Monticello in Minnesota, Pilgrim in Massachusetts, Point Beach 1 in Wisconsin, Susquehanna 2 in Pennsylvania, Sequoia 1 and 2 in Tennessee, and Watts Bar 1 in Tennessee.
So they're spreading it around.
They are. The Sequoia and Watts Bar facilities resolved their problems after the reporting period ended and moved up to the highest category. The remaining 7 will undergo NRC scrutiny. New data released from Japan may help researchers to determine exactly how radioactive materials were released into the atmosphere from the Unit 1 reactor during the early days of the Fuk crisis. 14 monitoring plants around the Fuk nuclear plant recorded radiation levels every 20 seconds. The data recorded by the monitoring post show the radiation levels dramatically spiked an hour before the hydrogen explosion ripped apart the Unit 1 reactor building. A senior researcher at the Japan Atomic Energy Agency said the spike in radiation levels may have been caused by emergency venting operations meant to reduce pressure. It's the first time Japan's venting procedures were tested, but they failed to prevent the hydrogen explosions, which released radioactive materials into the atmosphere.
Well, you got to test them.
Within 12 hours of the earthquake, pressure in the Unit 1 reactor was twice the design levels, which also made pumping cooling water into the reactor difficult. So some of the radiation came not from the explosion, but from the venting. Monthly testing at Massachusetts Pilgrim Nuclear Plant found that an emergency communications link and link to federal regulators was not functional in the control room and other parts of the plant.
That's why they call it the control room, right? You have to be in the control?
That's right. Dedicated phone lines and other systems can connect nuclear plants directly with the NRC in an emergency. On Thursday this week, the NRC released a notification from Entergy that the emergency notification system was found to be unavailable in the control room and the technical support operations support center of the Pilgrim nuclear plant. It was operating normally at full power, though.
Well, that's something.
It is something. The truck that caught fire half a mile underground at a southeastern New Mexico nuclear waste dump was 29 years old, improperly maintained, and operating without an automatic fire suppression system, according to a new report. It also detailed deficiencies in emergency training and responses at the waste isolation pilot plant.
It's called WIP.
WIP! Near Carlsbad. It was preventable, said Ted Wyka, a Department of Energy official who led the investigation. An investigation of the radiation released 9 days later that contaminated 17 workers is expected in a few weeks. This was just about a fire at a nuclear waste dump. The investigation of the truck fire did not reveal exactly what sparked the blaze, but Wicca said the old truck that was hauling salt.
Well, you gotta get salt from one place to another, don't you? If you're dumping nuclear waste.
You do, I think. Had a buildup of oil and other combustible materials, as well as active leaks, which are, as you know,
better than passive leaks?
Better than passive leaks. A nuclear waste dump in Armstrong County, Pennsylvania, where radioactive materials were buried in the 1960s and 70s, contains more dangerous weapon-grade uranium and plutonium than originally thought, calling into question federal oversight of the waste's disposal and greatly complicating its cleanup, according to a report issued by the NRC. Much of the waste was produced during the process of manufacturing fuel for commercial nuclear power plants and the Navy's nuclear submarines. The report from the Regulatory Commission's Office of Inspector General describes a record-keeping system at the nuclear waste disposal of... All right, that's unreadable. No one knows exactly what is contained in the waste site and how much of it is there. Information that became classified 2 years ago. Efforts to clean up the site have been placed on hold while the Army Corps of Engineers makes a plan to deal with even the most dangerous types of waste. You trust them, right?
Sure, I'm an Adam. What do I know?
Clean, cheap, safe. Too trustworthy to meet our friend the Atom. Eddie, go trust yourself.
I will.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of secret stuff. The White House has been withholding for 5 years more than 9,000 top secret documents that were sought by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for its investigation into the now-defunct CIA Detention and Interrogation Program. Even though President Obama hasn't exercised a claim of executive privilege, the White House has just withheld them. This from McClatchy's Washington Bureau, which, if you don't know, has been right so many times when everybody else in Washington has been wrong. It's silly. In contrast to public assertions that it supports the committee's work, the White House has ignored or rejected offers in multiple meetings and in letters to find ways for the committee to review the records, according to a McClatchy investigation. The significance of the materials couldn't be learned, but the administration's refusal to turn them over or to agree to any compromise raises questions about what they would reveal about the CIA's use of waterboarding and other harsh interrogation techniques on suspected terrorists in secret overseas prisons. The dispute indicates that the White House is more involved than it has acknowledged in the unprecedented power struggle between the committee and the CIA, which has triggered charges that the agency searched the panel's computers without authorization. These documents certainly raise the specter that the White House has been involved in stonewalling the investigation, says Elizabeth Goldtine, the co-director of the Brennan Center for Justice, Liberty, and National Security at the New York University Law School. The Senate committee and the CIA declined to comment. In a statement to McClatchy, the White House confirmed that a small percentage of the 6.2 million pages of documents provided to the committee were, quote, set aside because they raise executive branch confidentiality interests, unquote. Obama told reporters that the administration has worked with the committee to ensure that its study is well-informed and that he was committed to seeing the report declassified once a final version is completed. The report has been supposedly completed and unreleased for quite a while now. He said it wouldn't be proper for him to comment directly on the battle between the CIA and the committee. The Democratic-controlled committee has largely kept silent about the tussle with the White House, even as some members have decried what they contend has been the CIA's refusal to surrender key materials on the agency's use under the Bush administration of interrogation methods like waterboarding and other regrettable procedures. In question are some 9,400 documents that came to the committee's attention in 2009, according to McClatchy. It's unclear whether the CIA first gave the committee staff access to the materials before the White House withheld them. And one report says that they were withheld because they involve the previous administration. But the president was busy this week appearing on an internet satirical chat show to promote the Affordable Care Act, and says the producer, Scott Aukerman, of the show, "For me, the most important thing was that it didn't come across as an advertisement. I wanted it to be a funny, normal video. And the great part about it was the White House was very accommodating of that and didn't want to get in the way of our problems, our process. The good thing about Between Two Ferns, the name of the show, is that it's a talk show and people go on talk shows to plug things. So when we talked about it from that angle, It makes sense that Obama would come on the show to plug this thing. It didn't really bother me. We've done integrated marketing in the shows before, and that's the great part about fake talk shows. So it really didn't bother us at all. We just didn't want it to be an ad that wasn't funny at all. When the White House caught on with that, it was just smooth sailing. They were laughing just as much at what was going down. They couldn't have been easier to deal with. See? All you have to do is not want something from them.
Yo.
And then there's this.
I can see clearly now. Yo, seeing can be believing.
I'm looking through you.
If you're transparent. Hi, I'm B-Rock. And here at B-Rock's Transparency World, transparency's not just the name of the game. It is the game. Ever wondered why you couldn't see the authorization for the discredited torture programs of the past? Well, now you can. Just take advantage of Transparency World's Spring Redaction Blowout Sale and you'll see it all, brilliantly displayed behind clean black lines. If it was any clearer, your kids could read it. Or how about this? 9,000 pages that not even the Senate Intelligence Committee could get their hands on. But now, thanks to the Transparency World promise, we can offer those pages to you not at rock-bottom prices, but at B-Rock-bottom prices. As usual at Transparency World, delivery is optional. Hey, ever dreamed of having your own whistleblower? We're cleaning them out. They've all got to go by next Sunday night, and they are priced to move. Transparency World is your one-stop shopping headquarters, and because this is B-Rock Transparency World, while you're shopping, I'm ad-libbing. Hey, how about Zach's hair? Material written for previous ad-libs is also yours for the asking at Transparency World. At least we say it is, and that's the Transparency World promise. If we said it's available, you know that we said it. But hey, don't take my word for it. Ask anyone who's taken my word for it. At B-Rock's Transparency World, getting to see what you want to see is as simple as 123 and another number not to be disclosed at this time. So take the short trip from wherever you are to wherever you want to be. And there we are. Look for my friendly face on the magic sign. I'm so transparent, even I can see through me. B-Rock's Transparency World, your number one way to find out what you just can't find out. See why more and more people every day are hearing me say, at B-Rock's Transparency World, knowledge is power. But so is power.
Transparency World. You won't believe what you see.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Government of President Michelle Bachelet of Chile has apologized to the, in the name of the Chilean state, to the indigenous Mapuche tribe for taking their lands, and said it has a pending debt in terms of public policies that will allow the region where 600,000 of the Indians live to emerge from poverty. That's nice. A Lexington, Kentucky pastor apologized to people who were offended by a white man performing in blackface as part of a skit at the church. Pastor Jeff Fugate of Claves Mill Road Baptist Church said he'd gotten at least a dozen messages from people upset by the performance. Part of the National Young Fundamentalists Conference held at the church this week. He didn't know in advance that his personal assistant, Joseph Pickens, would perform in blackface as part of a skit involving a boxing match pitting him as Mr. T against someone portraying Curly of the Three Stooges. A YouTube video showing the skit appeared Friday on StuffFundiesLike.com, which built itself as a humor site aimed at independent fundamental Baptists. Just had to share that with you. Surfing Life magazine has apologized after an author, Nathan Myers, wrote a story on a 23-year-old surfer for the Australian magazine's March edition, beginning with his apish face.
Sorry.
The surfer is an Aborigine. Aboriginal. The magazine says, yesterday was brought to our attention that Otis Carey, the surfer in question, and his family were offended by a term used in the article. At Surfing Life, we absolutely abhor racism of any kind and actively work to eradicate it from our culture. We offer our unreserved apologies, and on a personal note, our editor is a man of color. So are some of my best friends, babe. Dayline Minneapolis, Minneapolis State Representative Pat Garofalo apologized, then apologized more for a weekend tweet that suggested that NBA teams are crime waves waiting to happen. Quote, let's be honest, 70% of teams in the NBA could fall tomorrow and nobody would notice a difference with possible exception of increase in street crime, he wrote. in the last 24 hours, he said in a written apology, I've had the opportunity to relearn one of life's lessons. It's best to refer to people as individuals as opposed to groups. I sincerely apologize to those who are unfairly categorized. Pitching coach Don Worthen of the New York Mets have apologized after Worthen used an ethnic slur describing the translator for a pitcher. And all Arkansas Little Rock, Arkansas middle school teachers apologized after accidentally showing a sexual picture of herself to her Little Rock school district class. The incident happened at Forest Heights Middle School when the teacher made a mistake while trying to play something from her iCloud account and transferred the inappropriate picture to the iPads in the classroom. Yeah, let's all get wired. In a rare public apology, General Motors acknowledged this week it may have reacted too slowly to a safety issue linked to 13 deaths. The delayed response could potentially cost GM tens of millions of dollars. This is linked to the car's ignition switches, which GM says can be accidentally turned from the run position to the accessory position while the car is being driven. When this happens, the engine shuts off and the safety systems, including power steering, anti-lock brakes, and airbags, are disabled. I haven't seen GM apologize since they apologized to Ralph Nader in 1966, said the executive director of the Center for Auto Safety. It's a huge deal, he says. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave. On the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast at www.wno.org, soundcloud.com, forget the other one. Oh, and iTunes. And it'll be just like me remembering this all. If you'd agree to put it with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Adrian Botnam, who is rocking out here at Global Radio in London while helping with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here on always available at harryshearer.com, where those Cars I Talk t-shirts are flying off the shelves. Somebody nail them down, will you? Or just close the door. Oh, and of course, for you Twitter users, check in with me every once in a while. I'm on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. And if you want to know where to find streams of this broadcast all day every Sunday, check out a wonderful website. I have nothing to do with it. Called publicradiofan.com. Lists where every public radio show you like or you know about can be heard whenever you want to hear it. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change Is Easy Radio Network. So long from London. Woo! Easy, man. So long from London.